Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One. My name is Alan Stanford.
And welcome to Hamlet in Hoth. Now, by the strangest twist of fate, a company of travelling players arrive at the castle. This was by no means unusual in Shakespeare's time. Travelling players were all over the place. They usually travelled because the theatres were closed in the towns, because the towns were full of the plague. So having players arrive on your doorstep was a very handy way of going to the theatre. However, these are players that Hamlet knows, and it's going to prove very useful to Hamlet in the setting up, shall we say, of Claudius, because Hamlet still has a doubt in his mind.
The actors are come hither, my lord.
Then came each actor on his ass.
The best actors in the world, either for tragedy, comedy, history, pastoral, pastoral comical, historical pastoral, tragical historical, tragical comical historical pastoral, scene indivisible, or poem unlimited. Seneca cannot be too heavy, nor Plautus too light. For the law of writ and the liberty, these are the only men.
O Jephthah, judge of Israel, what a treasure hadst thou.
What a treasure had he, my lord?
Why, one fair daughter and no more, the which he loved passing well.
Still on my daughter.
Polonius, as I say, once he's made his mind up about it, never lets it go. That's part of his problem. He never steps back to consider the real cause of Hamlet's problem. Polonius has made up his mind, and that must be the truth. And thank you to Emmett Duffy and to Daniel Fallon. Hamlet has a problem. He knows the players, and he wants them to act on the spot, and the speech he wants to hear is that of Priam's death and the siege of Troy. Hamlet wants to hear about the death of kings. He's working something over in his mind that he's not yet happy about. The speech, in fact, is about the murder of a king and father.
We'll have a speech straight.
What speech, my lord?
I heard thee speak a speech once. 'Twas Aeneas' tale to Dido, and thereabout of it especially, where he speaks of Priam's slaughter.
The player gives the speech, in which an old and good king is slaughtered by a monster and brute of a man. If Polonius could only see what was in front of him, he'd understand it all. But he just thinks the speech is too long. Having heard about the slaughter of the old king, Hamlet wants the player to jump on ahead to Hecuba, the queen, the loving and loyal wife to Priam.
Say on, come to Hecuba.
But who, oh who, had seen the mobile queen run barefoot up and down, a cloud upon that head where late the diadem stood, and for a robe about her lank and overteamed loins, a blanket in the alarm of fear caught up.
Now, he's painting a picture here of Hecuba as the perfect grieving widow.
But if the gods themselves did see her then, when she saw Pyrrhus make malicious sport, in mincing with his sword her husband's limbs, the instant burst of clamour that she made, unless things mortal move them not at all, would have made milch the burning eyes of heaven and passion in the gods.
Look whether he has not turned his colour and his tears in his eyes. Pray you, no more.
That instant burst of clamour that the player speaks of shames not only Gertrude in Hamlet's eyes, but also Hamlet in his own. In other words, through these two extracts from an obscure play, he has reconsidered the behavior of Claudius, the death of his father, and also the behavior of his mother, who didn't even grieve for more than a month. When he compares her to Hecuba, when he thinks of Hecuba and the grief, the burst of clamor that she made at the death of her husband, it lessens Gertrude in his eyes. But it also lessens himself, because it makes him feel that he did not grieve enough, as we will hear in a moment. And thank you there, too, Paul Harkin, to Thomas O'Quinnagon, and to Emmett Duffy for that extract.
Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.